Hi, everybody, and we are going to continue now. We are working in the rays and the initiations webinar commentary. This is program four. We're in part two of this book. Part one has been done in written commentary. Maybe there will be an opportunity to do it in a video commentary as well. We will see. Sometimes more ideas are added in the video commentary method. We have been talking about the restoration of the mysteries and the opportunity lying before hierarchy as well as humanity. Hierarchy has to take its next step forward, and its externalization is not only for the sake of the human being, it's also part of the planetary process and also has something to do with what hierarchy itself must do. So we have to learn to see from a more decentralized point of view than is usually the case with humanity at its present stage of unfoldment. The hierarchy, he tells us, has its own life and its own goals and objectives, its own evolutionary rhythm and its own spiritual expansions, and these are not the same as those of the human kingdom. That's the main idea here. The goals and objectives have to do with the way of higher evolution, whereas humanity's goals and objectives have to do with the usual five initiations through which the hierarchy or the true members of the hierarchy have already passed. Even though, as I said, in the circle, see on this important chart, people on the probationary path, this various grades of disciples and initiates of the first, second, and third, and fourth degree are included within this blue circle of hierarchy. You know, this chart has been colored by Keith Bailey with AUM, and he's given permission for people in the esoteric field to use it. And it is very helpful, especially the coloring. You know, Master DK has given us this chart, but the colored lines and colored circles are helpful, definitely. These goals and rhythms will become more familiar to thinking men as hierarchy approaches closer to the physical plane. And let's just see here. Master DK's work. Okay, let me, having a little trouble here. There we go. Master DK's, wow, work has made this far clearer. If you want to know how to distinguish between works which claim to be works inspired by Master DK and the real thing, just see what they talk about and see the authority with which they speak about the future and of areas of the planetary energy system which normal human beings can know nothing about. This inclusive and planned activity of the hierarchy is related to spiritual incentives which have their roots in Shambhala. It's the great magnetic point. Once the master becomes an initiate of the sixth degree at Chohan, he can enter into Shambhala. Some few initiates of the fifth degree along the first ray line can do the same. There, the life aspect is being almost violently stimulated through the actions of the Lords of Liberation. Now, yet it is a great center of peace, and he talks about the hierarchy as a very vortex of activity, and yet this is being said, the life aspect. And how shall we look at this life aspect? Is it the will? It's something in a way more than the will. It's that which vitalizes all things on the planet. The life aspect is being almost violently stimulated through the action of the Lords of Liberation who have swept into planetary activity. because of the use of the second stanza of the great invocation. Amazing how those who... Now, he's not saying only by disciples. I suppose it has to do with the use by hierarchy as well, which was, yes, which was used potently by members of hierarchy, and that's by hierarchy especially, and not only by disciples. Yet it was given out to disciples, and many didn't really want to use it because it was such a drastic stanza. But one can see if the Lords of Liberation were really to be invoked, really to sweep into activity, that those experts in the art of invocation, the members of the hierarchy, would have to be using the stanza, and who knows in what form, certainly not necessarily in the English language that Master DK has made available to us. Again, it was not used by them solely on behalf of humanity or for the liberation of mankind. It had hierarchical implications and was imparted to man by the hierarchy for permission to move along the way. And when he talks about the way, it's not just the path, it's the hierarchical way. And for hierarchy, we recognize this, the way of higher evolution. The releasing of the saving force, because the hour of service had arrived, permitted at the same time the inflow of an aspect of energy which never reached humanity at all and was not intended for strictly human use. Okay, so we're further being decentralized and speaking of that which stimulates the hierarchy itself and not necessarily humanity, but which was retained by the hierarchy for the vitalizing into renewed livingness of the seven major ashrams. So we're talking about ashramic vitalization from Shambhala. Facilitated or made possible by the Lords of Liberation. Oh, that's Law of Love? No. Let's have something here. And we'll call it this, Lords of Liberation. Okay. Made possible by the Lords of Liberation, thus enabling the entire ashram of the Christ to lift itself onto a higher spiritual level and closer to the door which leads to life. And this can be considered to be Shambhala or the door leading into the way of the higher evolution, before which only the Chohan can, at this time at least, truly stand. Maybe the choice of which paths upon that higher way to take were the prerogative of the fifth degree initiate in earlier times, but not any longer. Everything has been elevated, and one must be a Chohan in order to make that choice at the great decision. These statements veil deep hierarchical mysteries and are not in any way related to the mysteries which concern humanity when the hierarchy is externalized. So we're just being told that they exist, and about them we can know nothing, but it is a great center of planetary life which has its own laws and its own methods of advancement. And this is for the understanding the relativism of progress. There is progress on every level, and all beings are making progress. We can... What is the progress of the One Universal Logos? Well, we might say it is the fulfillment of its intended purpose in the world of its self-reflection. These mysteries will not be revealed to men. Only a general statement of the effects upon the hierarchy of certain mysterious activities is permissible, simply so that we may know that all have their own methods of progress, and not for us to become too self-centered, too centralized in our humanity, as if the entire planetary life revolves around us. They serve to show the steady pulsation of the evolutionary rhythm which permeates every atom, form, group, and center upon our planet. Steady pulsation. See that, and that's kind of a first ray type of motion, in a sense. the power that touches and then withdraws. A first ray type of motion. The power that touches and then withdraws. This a steady pulsation of the evolutionary rhythm which permeates every atom, form, group, center upon our planet, producing effects upon the lowest forms of existence and on and up to the very highest. All are evolving. All lives on our planet, including the life of the planet itself, all are evolving. There is not anywhere but progress and a steady movement forward. That's the first ray movement into clearer light and greater livingness. This is called the energy of progress onward. And it's a onward. And it's a first ray type of motion compared with spiral cyclic motion and rotary motion. In these instructions, I'm dealing with the entire theme of initiation from its broad and general angle and from the angle of definition. It is not my intention, therefore, to duplicate here what is given in Volume 2 of Discipleship in the New Age, and that is a manual for initiation. And we might say, a preparatory manual. Our approach will be somewhat different in this final section of our treatise. We will confine ourselves to the effects of the rays upon the initiate and to the relation existing between the ray energies and various initiations which I have already outlined. And we have referred often to page 340 in this book, it's coming up shortly, in which the particular ray associated with the particular initiation most associated with it is given. We will perhaps be able to go back and to discuss some of what is given in Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 2. In this section, also, I do not intend to deal with the scientific awakening of the centers or with the technicalities of bringing them into desired balance and activity. I've already given what is necessary in my various books, where a very great deal of information is given and will be found throughout, through all of them. And anybody who studied earlier sections of Treatise on the Seven Rays and, and any one of them, Esoteric Psychology 1, 2, Esoteric Healing, especially also Esoteric Astrology, knows how much the Tibetan has really given. By means of this diffusion and scattering, kind of a Mercurian, Geminian third ray activity, the teaching is protected, should we say, from those who do not have the will, the tenacity, the inspired, correct motivation to gather what is scattered. By means of this diffusion and scattering, the teaching is protected and cannot constitute a danger to the general public, you know, which doesn't want to, let's say, read very much, but wants something which, so to speak, works and would apply it according to the level of its consciousness, the consciousness of the general public, which is not high. So it's just we don't give the loaded gun, you know. Maybe the gun is in the hand, but the bullets are scattered far and wide across the terrain, and you have to go in search of them. Students in the immediate future will have to search out the teaching in all the many volumes and hunt most carefully for the details of the science of the centers. Hunt most carefully. Well, with the CD-ROM, we've been greatly facilitated, have we not? Anent, the details of the science of the centers and for information anent their nature and processes. Now, there has been a gathering of much information on the centers, and so already much has been collected, but it has not been published for the general public, and it's generally people who are interested in these matters who run into these compilations. The whole subject of the centers is dangerous if misunderstood. The centers constitute a menace when prematurely awakened. They just become out of control, and Master Moria also talks about the conflagration of the centers, which presumably means they're bursting into flame and much destruction of the physical body can occur thereby, and maybe some destruction within the etheric body as well. The centers constitute a menace when prematurely awakened or unduly energized, and this is the in the work what we call this the problem of PRBM, PRB, presumably. Oh well, problem of overstimulation. And this entire subject can prove most dangerous to the curiosity-impelled man and to the ignorant experimenter. So the built-in cautionary note is not there, the breadth of knowledge is not there, and as it has been said, fools rush in where angels fear to tread. The time is not yet ripe for the presentation of this subject in a fully coordinated manner. Okay, and students are warned against publishing. They can gather for their own use, but publishing a clear correlated thesis on the subject as a result of their researches in my books. Nevertheless, the true aspirant, and there we mean again at least the one of who is the initiate of the first degree, must be given the needed information. Yes, it's a fine line, isn't it? To be wary about publishing this kind of material so that it can reach the general public in a clearly correlated manner, which requires no work of them and basically hands them the means of doing themselves harm and maybe harm to others, hands that information on a silver platter. So we have to work for the information we get. And DK has given us an extraordinary amount of information, but has meanwhile protected it through scattering, through diffusion, through veiled comments, through oblique references for the presentation or given the presentation of statement of fact along with symbolic statements. It's up to us to read between the lines and to see which are direct statements of fact and which we have to decipher according to our knowledge. So again, in the question of occultism all the way through, when dealing with the technicalities of occultism, great caution is needed. And this persists. And we are warned. So a word to the wise is sufficient here. The mysteries are revealed not primarily by the reception of information anent them and their processes, but by the action of certain processes carried out within the etheric body of the disciple. And this is so important. This allows the transmission of higher energies to reach the physical energy system, because the etheric body is a conduit for various types of energies depending upon the focus of the individual, and probably certain changes within the etheric body allow the conduit of higher and higher energies. So the mysteries are not revealed primarily by the reception of information anent them and their processes, but by the action of certain processes carried out within the etheric body of the disciple. This is an ongoing, what can we call it, ongoing transmutation, a Uranus, the occult planet, and one of the major transformational rulers of the etheric body and of the cosmic ethers. We need a conduit from the cosmic ethers, which are the planes toward which we aspire, down to our own systemic etheric body. So these processes carried on in the etheric body, these enable him to know that which is hidden, I assume through direct contact. They put him in position possession of a mechanism of revelation. Okay. Put him in possession of a mechanism of revelation and make him aware of certain radiatory and magnetic powers or energies within himself which constitute channels of activity and modes whereby he may acquire that which it is the privilege of the initiate to own and use. So he discovers the means of acquisition within himself. And these means are both radiatory and magnetic. These means are both radiatory and magnetic. Well, okay, you know, we work forward and we learn, and there are accompanying changes in our mechanism as we apply what we know. The disciple upon the probationary path starts off on his quest for the so-called door of initiation, and for that which he will contact after passing through that door with a definite equipment and a created mechanism. You know, we must say of a certain caliber, right? Of a certain caliber. This has been acquired, and facility in its use has been attained through many cycles of incarnation. He can feel sensitively, he can think, he can probably concentrate, meditate, and the etheric body has certain energy flows operative within it. An incarnation is a definitely determined period from the angle of the soul wherein experiment, experience, and expression are the keynotes. We're always going to try something. We're going to encounter certain types of energies. We're going to be able to assimilate them and perhaps express them. At first experimentally and increasingly with skill. So an incarnation is a definitely determined period. Who determines? The soul, I suppose. It can cut short or extend the incarnational period. An incarnation is a definitely determined period from the angle of the soul, wherein experiment, experience, and expression are the keynotes in each incarnation. Each successive incarnation continues the experiment, deepens the experience, and relates the expression more closely to the latent unfolding divinity. We learn to express divinity according to the plan. And we continue to try this and try that. And we run into deeper and deeper sources of energy. More and more is revealed to us. We realize more and more. The same three words, in greatly enhanced interpretation and with the emphasis upon a much fuller opportunity, can be used to describe the progress of the initiate upon the final stages of the path. Now, what should we call that? Third, fourth, and fifth initiation, or fifth, sixth, and seventh? With this, we shall be partly engaged in this section. So, a parallel process, a parallel, though elevated, process. And we should be partly engaged in this section. I would ask you, whilst reading and pondering upon all that I have to say, and that is what we're doing here, aren't we, friends? We are reading and we are pondering. I mean, maybe your pondering would yield a different result than my own here, but maybe my own will be of some value and assist your own, perhaps. I would ask you, whilst reading and pondering upon all that I say, to have these three words in mind, experiment, experience, expression. It's a mnemonic, you know. He frequently uses the same letter to express successive stages of a process. I would ask you whilst reading, et cetera, to have these words in mind. Every initiation is approached by the disciple or initiate in a spirit of divine experimentation, but with a scientific aspect, because an initiation is a culminating point of achievement and success is a graded series of experiments, and success is a graded series of experiments with energy. Okay, so we have the, I guess what he's saying here, we engage in an experimental approach to initiation, i.e. to greater revelation and greater, or the conferral of greater powers. So we have to be willing, it's Uranian in a way. Uranus is the planet of experimentation, and as we approach the electromagnetic door of each initiation, we are trying certain things according to our best knowledge and the best advice we have received, and we see how they work, if they work, how they work, how they best work. We are seeing what works as we gain a certain status of understanding and empowerment, which can be considered equal to the stage of initiation we have to achieve, and then comes the application of the rod, which confirms that which we have achieved and adds to it as well. It's not just a confirmation, it's the there's the addition of consciousness and power by the application of the rod of initiation. Having garnered the fruits of the experiment above indicated, there follows a certain period where inexperience in the use of the related potencies takes place. So experiment, let's just say, experiment leads to garnering. And garnering to the use of that which has been garnered. Gathered, garnered. So having garnered the fruit of the experiment as we approach the door of initiation, thus indicated, there follows a certain period where an experience in the use of the related potencies takes place. Every approach to the door of initiation is an approach to certain potencies which are related to the energy system, which are related to each other, and to the energy system and consciousness of the one who approaches. This occupies the interlude between one initiation and another. Experience with the gathered potencies. Experience with the gathered potencies. This may cover a period of many lives, or prove relatively short. I guess it depends on which initiation we're talking about. Between the first and second, it may take many lives. The results of the experiment of initiation and of experience with the then endowed energies emerge as the ability of the initiate to express divinity more fully than heretofore. So we encounter new energies, we have gathered them, we are experimenting in their use, we master certain circumstances, and we have developed certain skills in relation to those energies, and now we express these energies in relation to the highest sense of divinity that can impress us or that we can receive. This means that he increasingly can function as a divine creator in relation to the hierarchical plan in the use of these energies which have given him through experience some skill in action whereby he can express them more divinely. This means that he increasingly can function as a divine creator in relation to the hierarchical plan, as the manipulator of the attractive energies of love, and as one who determines under the impelling will of Shambhala, the phase or aspect of the divine purpose with which he must himself be occupied in relation to the manifestation of the planetary logos. So he develops skill along three lines, intelligence, love, and will. And these skills affect the quality and efficacy of his expression. Okay, DVP. DVS. Develop skill along three lines. So let's repeat that. It's quite a long sentence, actually. The results of the experiment of initiation and of experience between the times of initiation with the then endowed energies, because we, at each initiation, new energies come to us, emerge as the ability of the initiate to express divinity more fully than heretofore. That is the privilege of the initiate following each successive initiation, the greater and fuller, more skillful expression of divinity. This means that he increasingly can function as a divine creator, that's the third aspect, in relation to the hierarchical plan. It's called the ray of creative intelligence, the third ray. This is in relation to the third aspect of divinity. In relation to the hierarchical plan, as the manipulator, again the third aspect, of the attractive energies of love. So we can draw energies together, people together. People are actually energies. We can contribute to coherence in the service of the plan. And as one who determines, under the impelling will of Shambhala, which the initiate begins to receive, the phase or aspect of the divine purpose, under the plan, with which he must himself be occupied in relation to the manifestation of the planetary logos. Each of us has to choose how we will serve the purpose by serving the plan. You will note that I do not say in relation to humanity. The initiate works in many fields of divine creativity, of which the field of mankind is only one. And notice the use of the word field. It is an area in which certain energies tend to express, and it seems to have a ring past not. The field of humanity, the field of the hierarchy, the field of Shambhala, the field of any one of our vehicles, there are coherent, there are energies expressing in each field coherently. So the initiate may work in any phase or aspect which is part of the manifestation or part of the intended manifestation of the planetary logos. Each one of us is responsible for choosing the field in which we will work. And, you know, someone may tell you, you should be doing this, you should be doing that. So many people tell me that I should be doing this, I should be doing that. It's mostly a projection, you know. It's their own estimation of what they should be doing, but projected upon me. And maybe you've had the same experience. We have to avoid, we have to have the ability actually to see and feel and register the consciousness of another. And if possible, a degree of the plan and purpose of another, although it rarely can occur fully. Maybe the master can really register the plan and purpose of another and somehow convey enough of that registration to the other to facilitate the forward progress of the other. He seems to do this with his students, but I don't think he ever tells the whole story. It's necessary to allow them certain discoveries on their own. Okay. These three words will therefore indicate the first type of approach to our subject. What I have to do, therefore, will in every case have them in mind, and let's remind ourselves, experiment, experience, and expression. All from the fifth letter of the alphabet, in English, the number 5, the fifth ray, the trial on error method, and the intelligent expression, application to various types of form in whatever field those forms may be found. So this was the first, this was the first thing. Okay, let's see if, okay, the revealed, okay, they're not revealed by information, but changes within the etheric body, and we are approaching the door of initiation, And in the whole process of initiation, these three words hold. And then he's going to go on to another factor he wants us to consider. Secondly, I would have you consider with me the various aspects of our sectional theme from the angle of the seven rays. This is a very, very broad application of the seven rays and deals with climactic developments in the human being and in the human energy system. By this I mean that disciples upon the different rays will all have the same goal. Okay, this is important. Make the same experiments, go through the same experience, and arrive equally at divine expression. However, their qualities and their modes of approach, this is what changes. Their reactions, their distinctive natures, will differ according to the ray type. This constitutes a most interesting and little-known phase of our study of initiation. We often talk about what the initiations do confer, but do we talk about what they confer for an individual whose soul is upon this ray or that ray or the other ray? And there may be significant differences, even though the general experience of the initiation will be similar. So this constitutes the most interesting and little known, I would agree with that, phase of our study of initiation. Or, in other words, what are the, let's just say at the third initiation there is a staged, a kind of fearful conflict involving, I believe, Mars and the moon veiling Vulcan. Okay, but there are seven types of soul rays, so how will this conflict work out in the case of each of those on the soul, particular soul ray? DK has already given us in Letters on Occult Meditation the seven different methods by which the causal body can be destroyed. So he's given us an anchor there, showing us unique methods of destruction according to the ray. But maybe he has not so much given us the signatures of the different rays passing through the third initiation, the second initiation. Maybe that's for us to figure out. And I suppose we can do it in relation to our own particular ray, but our own rays for students of this material tend to be either the second or the first, mostly. So maybe we will not have a very clear idea of the kinds of experiments being made by those on different soul rays as they approach the door of initiation and the kinds of experiences they will have afterwards, or the kinds of expression which they will offer once there has been a significant skill developed in the use of those energies. Initiation has been a blanket happening, and no note has been made of the ray implications. This I propose to remedy, and from some experience with this book, I would say that he has remedied it in part, but that there's more that we, as students of the wisdom, can fill in and add according to our experience and according to our speculation. Each of the seven initiations, for instance, is an exemplification or a revealer of one of the seven ray qualities or tendencies. And I suppose those with that particular ray for their soul ray, and maybe monadic ray later on, pass through the initiation in a particularly well-facilitated manner. And maybe it's more difficult for others on different rays to pass through that same initiation. For instance, the second initiation is said to be easier to pass through for those who are on the third and fifth rays, the more mental rays, and more difficult for the other rays. And maybe for some other rays or other initiations, it is easier for those on the 2-4-6 line to pass through, or the 1-3-5-7, etc. So each of the seven initiations, for instance, is an exemplification or a revealer of one of the seven ray qualities or tendencies. It is governed and conditioned always by a certain ray. And this is one of the factors which disciples have to learn and grasp whilst preparing for initiation. And what ray are they really going to work with? Whatever may be your ray, if you're approaching the second initiation, it's going to be the sixth ray, which has to be, upon which skill has to be developed. If you're approaching the third initiation, it has to be the fifth ray. Maybe that ray will be in your equipment. It would facilitate it, facilitate the process if it were in your equipment, but maybe not, and you still have to learn. So this is one of the factors which disciples have to learn and grasp whilst preparing for an initiation, because it involves success in handling and manipulating certain types of divine energy. Well, we can see that this approach to occultism is very energy specific, this approach to psychology. The generalities are useful, they are good, but it's in the detecting of certain types of energies which are specifically available to us at specific times, and the use of these energies, these are the things which we must, as spiritual occultists in training, learn to master. Or if not master, at least develop some reasonable skill with. Each of the initiations brings in one or other of the seven centers into full functioning activity. Not from the angle of awakening or of stimulation, but from the angle of the wheel turning upon itself, which is a very high stage of development of the center. You know, let us say the highest stage of development of a center, when it becomes the wheel turning upon itself in all directions. This is an Old Testament expression and is wholly inadequate. You know, he oftentimes gives us certain phrases and tells us to learn them, but then we find the wheel turning upon itself as an adequate isolated unity is inadequate. Monad is inadequate. He's been searching for the right words to convey certain things. These words don't even necessarily exist in our language. And after using them for quite a while, he oftentimes tells us that they have not really been adequate to that which he had hoped to express. So this is an Old Testament expression and is wholly inadequate, but I can find no other to substitute. The wording is totally blind and inadequate and will prove to you somewhat meaningless except to the initiate who has experienced that turning. Perhaps this is more than seeing the turning. It is at the highest development of the center that it not only turns in two directions, but turns in all directions simultaneously and enters, it's kind of likened to fourth dimensional motion. Right. Okay. As esoteric astrologers know well, there comes, well, at least they are familiar with the idea, right? There comes a life cycle wherein the disciple reverses himself upon the wheel of life, the zodiacal wheel, and from going clockwise around the zodiac, he now begins to go anti-clockwise. And, you know, this has to do with the, this has to do with the reversal of energy streams within the etheric body. He learns that the substance aspect of nature may still be conditioned by the forces flowing through them sequentially and serially, and I suppose in a clockwise manner, and according to his horoscope and according to the exoteric mode of zodiacal revolution. At the revolution, interesting. But at the same time, the disciple is receiving energy currents from the reversed wheel whereon he as a soul finds himself. So the higher aspects of the energies available are available to him now. Higher aspects of the energies available are available to him now. the higher aspects of these energies. So there are lower and higher aspects of the zodiacal energies. And the higher aspects are processed by the soul in a certain way and made available, and the lower aspects are processed by the form, and they tend in opposite directions. So you could wonder whether there are energy streams within the etheric body flowing in contrary directions simultaneously. This is something that I think does occur, but gradually the stream flowing in the counterclockwise direction, shall we say, in the direction of elevation from below to above, rather than descent from above to below, begin to prevail. And when the stream is flowing entirely in the upward direction, the direction which leads it to energize the centers above the diaphragm, rather than plunge from the passage through the energies above the diaphragm into the lower chakras where it there energizes, when it has finally occurred, this energizing of the higher centers, consistently it is flowing in a certain manner which makes the lower energies rise into the higher. And thus the wheel is completely reversed. At first, we only have the initial process of reversing the wheel, and there are, and I can't be specific about it, but there are contradictory flows, counter flows, we might say, from above to below and from below to above, and they, in a way, provide a rending process. They somewhat work against each other and cause friction, the friction in the aspirant's and disciple's life, which makes the life, to use that colorful word, wretched, meaning, you know, frictional, inharmonious, unsettled, painful, and so forth. So he is consequently the recipient of two currents of energy going in reverse directions within the etheric body and within the etheric counterparts of the other bodies, as well as everybody does have the higher four subplanes as a kind of a etheric counterpart to the energy of the entire vehicle. That would mean that the causal body is actually located within the etheric counterpart found on the mental plane, and only the fourth subplane, which is not in the causal body, and yet is in a sense, because the mental unit is included within the causal body, only that fourth subplane is also included in the etheric aspect of the mental plane. So he is consequently the recipient of two currents of energy going in reverse directions, hence the increased conflict in his life and circumstances. You could almost think that the Scorpio is a great sign in which this could happen, and St. Paul, as the quintessential Scorpio, you know, characterized this for us in the famous words, "O wretched man that I am, who can save me from the body of this death?" These constitute the reason for the tests of initiation. We are moving in two directions simultaneously, and we have to overcome the counter flow, as it were, or the flow that corresponds to the clockwise direction of the energies, the direction which stimulates form rather than consciousness. One of these is called, you know, the wheel of form. The other is called the wheel of consciousness. And when we reverse the wheel, we are entering into the development, concentrated development of the second aspect, which is the consciousness aspect. And we are then paying attention to the wheel of consciousness and trying to strengthen it in relation to the wheel of form. All right. On a tiny scale, this on a tiny scale is true of the centers in the etheric body of the disciple. They too evidence the same dual activity once the path of discipleship is trodden and the path of initiation is entered. So it's not only between the centers that these flows occur, but within the centers themselves. The counter flows occur within the centers themselves. Okay. The zodiacal wheel is itself essentially a cosmic center. Now, this is one of those, you know, excellent quotations, and I always try to find exactly. It's on page 339, right? The zodiacal wheel is itself is essentially a cosmic center. It is a 12-petaled lotus, but it is a 12-petaled lotus within the 1,000-petaled lotus of the unknown cosmic entity, the one referred to in my earlier books as the one about whom naught may be said. This is putting the zodiac of constellations in context. And page 339. I'm always looking for that quote and eventually find it, but I should know exactly what page to go to. Okay, so this is page 339. So the great entity, known as the one about whom naught may be said, of whom there are many, as far as I can understand, but we have our own in our local cosmos system, has its own centers, its own chakras, and certain constellations are those chakras, and the great collection of constellations we call the circle of the zodiac, zodiacal constellations, serve as the heart in the head center of the one about whom naught may be said. Heart in the head center. And so, you know, they have a very great power. If you consider our own 12-petal lotus in the head, it is a controlling center. It has to be a controlling center of some of the other chakras. Maybe it has a certain control over the seven head centers within the head. Maybe it has control over other centers found within the body. It is highly placed. So these zodiacal constellations are not insignificant in the total economy of the great super cosmic logos here, nor are they insignificant in the total energy economy of the human being. Some of them, of course, may be more unfolded than others. That would mean that certain of the constellations of the zodiac may be more developed than others. I think that is an interesting possibility. We do know that there are planets. We're told, excuse me, about them. The synthesizing planets, the most developed. The sacred planets, not as developed as the synthesizing planets, but more developed than the three non-sacred planets. And then there are a host of other planets which may be like past masters in the lodge, or they may be like totally lesser planets altogether, not even at the stage of development of the non-sacreds. We have to wonder whether the asteroids are alive anymore, whether they simply have a kind of thought form effect from a former time, but there are lesser planets out there that are certainly non-sacred, but even of a lower caliber. So a whole range of spiritual development exists among the planets, and why should it not be so for the zodiacal constellations? You know, when we look at the constellation Capricorn, it seems to be mentioned in other lists, which give it a considerable preeminency. And I'm trying to think, are there, maybe when we look at the constellation Scorpius, it has some amazingly powerful stars in it, including the great star Antares, which is a super, super, super giant. Have you ever seen those comparative pictures where the Sun and Sirius and so forth and ever larger stars into the giant range are compared with Antares? And Antares is so huge, it tops them all. So there are probably greater and lesser developed lords of constellations, and corresponding, I would say, to synthesizing lords of constellations, sacred lords of constellations, and still non-sacred, relatively, non-sacred lords of constellations. So always we have to look for hierarchy in any field of lives, in any circle of lives of a certain type. It can be, and the same is true of soul to logoi. And we've seen these divided according to the spectrum. And we know almost certainly that there are synthesizing soul to logoi and sacred soul to logoi and non-sacred soul to logoi. Our sun is still a non-sacred soul to logos in its particular collection of related soul to logoi, whereas the Sirius is a sacred solar logos. And you start to look at some of the solar logoi in Orion, and they're just immense in terms of their power, and they certainly must have a synthesizing nature. But of course, all of this is somewhat beyond our ken, and yet the general analogy, I think, can hold. The multiplicity of zodiacal influences have eventually a dual effect. One upon Shambhala, the planetary head center, and the other upon the hierarchy, the planetary heart center. And here, you know, is a good augmentation of what is said in esoteric astrology, because there the effect of the constellations are correlated with different levels of the man, let us say, or of the planet. Sometimes they're correlated with Shambhala, sometimes with hierarchy, sometimes in terms of the man, they're correlated with the energies below the diaphragm. So I don't think we can fix on one particular area of influence for these great constellations. But we are seeing here, in relation to our planet, that one is correlated with Shambhala, has an effect upon Shambhala, and the other upon the hierarchy. The effect is also felt in the head center and heart center of every initiate. And I think this is important because DK has given us in certain writings how we should apply the areas of our horoscope, say, for instance, to our heart center, the ascendant, to the heart center, or to the throat center, or to the head center, and so forth. So we have to correlate this information that he's giving us, that the zodiacal influences can affect our head center and our heart center. This final duality is registered by the initiate of the highest degrees as he undergoes the eighth and ninth initiations, and the other seven initiations are governed by the seven rays. This is tantalizing in its implications, and the high initiate still has a head center and heart center. Even if we're dealing with what we call a Maya Virupa, it doesn't mean that it's inauthentic in any sense. And we have zodiacal influences involved in the final two initiations. So at least I want to put that down and maybe come back to it. Zodiacal influences involved in the taking of the eighth and ninth initiations. We will see that below, because he's going to give us this chart. And this chart is one that I want to begin a new program when discussing this chart. This is a very big hint here, and we have to compare this statement. This final activity is registered by the initiate of the highest degrees when he undergoes the eighth and ninth initiation between his heart center and head center. I want to compare that with what he says later in the book, and it's very little, of course, about the eighth and the ninth initiations. Well, okay, so I've been pretty well just doing one-hour programs now, although sometimes I expand. It has to do with what I can actually do here in terms of time and space. So this is the end of Rays and Initiations webinar commentaries, program number 4, pages 335 to, this looks like 339, up to 340. And we will begin, beginning of Rays and Initiations webinar commentary, program 5, pages 340 to something. Maybe we'll just be working on this chart. We have constantly, you know, referred to this chart, and You know, someone told me here, this is very important, that it's not sex magic, it's sex and and magic. This is one of those typos that occurred, and it can be very misleading. But we'll come to this as we work in our next program. Okay, friends, I think we're sufficiently at an end for this one, and it's so profound, this particular section of the book, part two of the Rays and the Initiation. So I'm sure we will all learn a lot as we progress together. Okay. We will see you for program number 5, which deals with this very important tabulation of the Rays in relation to the initiations. See you soon. Bye-bye.